Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
A gunman has killed 50 people and wounded another 53 at a gay nightclub in Orlando, Florida. It was the worst mass shooting in U.S. history. President Barack Obama, in an address to the nation Sunday, called the attack an act of terror and an act of hate. He said, "The American people are united in grief and outrage." Obama praised the police and others who worked to rescue the hostages and end the attack. The president also called the attack a further reminder of how easy it is for someone to get their hands on a weapon. Obama's comments mark his 15th address linked to a mass shooting during his presidency. Many families still do not know the fate of their loved ones who were at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando. Police have identified the shooter as Omar Siddiqui Mateen. He worked as a security guard since 2007. He was killed at the scene in a gunfight with police. Mateen is a U.S. citizen born in New York. His parents are from Afghanistan. U.S. Senator Bill Nelson of Florida said intelligence officials informed him the shooter might have pledged allegiance to the Islamic State. He added investigators are focused on Fort Pierce, about 190 kilometers from Orlando, where the gunman lived. Ronald Hopper of the FBI said Mateen purchased at least two guns last week. He said the FBI had earlier questioned Mateen after reports that he had made comments sympathetic to the Islamic State, but the agency determined there was not enough evidence to continue an investigation. Mateen's father, Mir Siddiqui, told NBC News that he did not believe the attack was connected to religion. He suggested it was more likely an act of homophobia. He said his son had expressed deep anger when he saw two men kissing recently. "We are saying we are apologizing for the whole incident," Siddiqui said. "We are in shock, like the whole country." The suspect exchanged gunfire with an officer working at the nightclub around 2 o'clock in the morning. About 300 people were inside. The gunman then went inside and took hostages, Orlando Police Chief John Mina said. About 3 hours later, officials sent in a special police team to rescue the hostages. Officers shot and killed the attacker. The shooter had an assault rifle and a handgun. "It appears he was organized and well prepared," Chief Mina said. World leaders have reacted to the news of the massacre in Florida with messages of sympathy and solidarity with the United States. French President François Hollande sent a statement condemning with horror the mass killing in Florida. It expressed the full support of France and the French with America's authorities and its people in this difficult time. Italian Premier Matteo Renzi posted a message on the social media website Twitter. "Our heart is with our American brothers," he wrote. The Vatican said Pope Francis joins the families of victims in prayer and compassion. Until Sunday, the deadliest mass shooting took place in 2007, when a student at Virginia Tech University killed 32 people before killing himself. There have been 13 mass shootings in the United States since 2012. Christopher Jones Cruz tells us about three of them.
In July 2012, James Holmes shot and killed 12 people and injured 70 in a movie theater in Aurora, Colorado. In December 2012, in Newtown, Connecticut, an armed 20-year-old man entered a school and used a semi-automatic rifle to kill 26 people, including 20 young children. And in June 2015, Dylan Roof shot and killed 9 African-American church members during a Bible study in a church in Charleston, South Carolina. Nigeria has a federal budget following months of debate between President Muhammadu Buhari and lawmakers. Officials are calling the new $30.4 billion spending plan the budget of change. The president signed the plan into law last month. The measure includes money for roads, railroads, bridges, and social services. Buhari said he hopes the spending plan will show Nigerians that their lawmakers can spend tax money wisely. In the past, critics say, Nigerian lawmakers used the federal budget to steal public money. Some political observers see the new budget as a step forward for responsible spending in Africa's largest economy. Dauda Garuba is with the Natural Resource Governance Institute, Nigeria. He said earlier budgets were filled with money that went directly to lawmakers, and some budgetary proposals were in need of more study. Garuba said the months of negotiations between Nigeria's National Assembly and the president show this budget is different. The bulk of the fights you were maybe hearing was an attempt by people to say, no, we cannot do this business as usual. And others saying that, okay, if you cannot do this business as usual, we have to do our thorough jobs, he added. But other Nigerians say the budget includes money for projects where corruption was a problem in the past. In the past, they say, lawmakers have made profits when large amounts of public money are spent. Olusegun Onagbindi helped create Budget, a group that examines public spending. He criticized lawmakers for giving $500 million to what have been called constituency projects. These projects are designed to help the districts of some lawmakers. The spending has nothing to do that has to do with core help for the people or maybe things that are sustainable, he says. It is just them being loyal to political party members and giving them what they feel they want to pass along. The Nigerian economy is close to entering a recession, partly because of the drop in oil prices last year. Oil is Nigeria's top export. A series of attacks on oil pipelines has caused production to drop by more than 500,000 barrels. This has weakened the economy even more. Inflation has risen to almost 14%. The government recently raised fuel prices by almost 67%. Yusuf Shamsuddin is a program officer at the Center for Democracy and Development. He said Nigerian lawmakers should not have approved spending $577 million on the National Assembly when the economy is weak. This huge amount can be cut down to provide developmental projects to the citizens and address our economic problems, he said. Shamsuddin said the next step in judging the budget will be to see whether the money goes to the government programs it is supposed to. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
The Philippine president-elect has a new program to fight crime. President-elect Rodrigo Duterte said people should go after drug dealers themselves. In a speech, he said people with guns should shoot and kill drug dealers who refuse to be taken to a police station. The same is true, he said, if drug dealers threaten people with a gun or a knife. Please feel free to call us, the police, or do it yourself if you have a gun. You have my support, Duterte said. Shoot him, and I'll give you a medal. His speech was reported on by the Associated Press. Duterte won the May 9th presidential election on a promise to end crime and corruption within 6 months of taking office. But his tough talk during and immediately after the presidential election has alarmed some. Human rights groups said that citizens could use the president's words to kill people they don't like by saying they were drug dealers. Rafende Jamin is Amnesty International's director for Southeast Asia and the Pacific. As leader of the Philippines, the president-elect must protect and uphold human rights, not reject them, he said. That includes the right to life, due process, and fair trial. As the longtime mayor of Davao City, Duterte put in tough penalties for crime, but Human Rights Watch said he went too far, using death squads to kill more than 1,000 people. I'm Bruce Alpert.
North Korea has spent $24 million and 4 years building the 6,000-square-meter, 35-meter-high Angkor Panorama Museum in Siem Reap, Cambodia. The Angkor Museum shows Khmer warriors fighting using spears, swords, and large elephants. The 12th-century Angkorian Empire built huge religious centers called temples. They are now UNESCO World Heritage Sites. The Cambodian government worked with North Korea's Mansudae Art Studio to build the museum and create paintings for it. The museum opened in December. Mansudae was created in 1959 to tell about North Korea and its ruling family. The stories are often untrue or highly exaggerated. The studio creates large projects. Its website says it has 4,000 workers, about a quarter of whom are artists. It says its studio is 120,000 square meters large, about 80,000 of which are indoors. It says the studio is probably the largest art production center in the world, and by far the largest and most important in North Korea. Yit Chandarot is the vice executive director of the Angkor Museum. He told VOA's Khmer service that visitors feel as if they are right there during the Angkor era. They feel as if they are with the people selling vegetables or those on the fighting elephants in the painting. The museum has a 13-meter-high, 123-meter-long, 360-degree mural showing thousands of warriors and artisans at war and work during the 12th century. 63 North Korean painters worked on the mural for 2 years. It is so realistic that some visitors believe it is a picture rather than a painting. Kaeu Samun lives in Bante Myanche province in Cambodia. She says the mural is amazing. I can see everything. Just sitting here in one place, you can see everything. She went to the museum after visiting Angkor Wat and the Bayon Temple. She said the museum helps people understand the history of the temples. She said it is easier to visit the museum than some of the temples spread throughout the province. Chandarot says people should visit the museum before they go to the nearby temples. He said the more than 40,000 images of ancient warriors, artisans, farmers, and animals help people understand the history of the temples and when they were built. Thai Narak Satya is the Secretary of State of Cambodia's Ministry of Culture and Fine Arts. He told VOA North Korea built the museum because of its relationship with the country's king. He said it is not designed to make money for North Korea. Let me tell you that the North Korean company completely abides by the technical condition and Khmer style of art. So it is not the nature of this business to generate income. The museum has not earned as much money as officials thought it would. About 90% of visitors are Cambodian. Foreign tourists bring valuable foreign currency to Siem Reap's economy. But many say they do not plan to visit the museum. Sarah and Ashley are from Britain. They say they have traveled a long way and do not want to see just a painting of the Angkor temples. Sarah told VOA she is quite surprised that they invested so much outside North Korea. Ashley said, "I want to see the real things. That is what I am here for. That is what we are going to do today. I am not interested in going to the museum." Christelle Bimar is a traveler from France. She is visiting Siem Reap with her 2 sons. She did not know about the museum. "I am not aware of what's inside," she said. She was sitting in her chair in the shade of a palm tree in front of the Angkor temple. "But yes, I think Angkor and Siem Reap deserve to have many more museums," she said. Chandarot says North Korea's decision to build the museum was an act of friendship. The agreement between the two countries says North Korea would be paid back the $24 million investment. The museum will then be fully owned by Cambodia under the agreement within 20 years. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
Recent disputes over using white actors to portray characters of color in Hollywood films have raised concerns that the media ignore minorities. Activist groups have called for more minorities to be hired for media jobs. Some Asian Americans worry that they are becoming invisible, especially in the entertainment industry. They say minorities are often underrepresented and their opinions go unheard. Experts say that is a problem in television news also. Asians represent the fastest growing racial minority in the United States. However, critics say there are few Asian faces reporting news across the country. Juju Chang is an Asian American news anchor. She questions whether there is enough diversity in top management jobs.
When I went on air at the network here, I was the only Asian American and among the few women. And I'm sad to say that all these years later, I think that we've gone a long way in terms of diversity in front of the camera, but I think we still have a ways to go behind the scenes, especially in upper management.
Chang says it is important for minorities to take part in the approval process for story ideas.
Until Asian Americans get real traction in that sense, we're going to keep, pressing our noses against the invisible window.
Asians make up about 3% of the broadcast workforce, while they are over 5% of the U.S. population. Angie Chuang is a journalism professor at American University. She says a cultural bias may be to blame.
The truth is that all kinds of psychological studies and employment studies have shown that we tend to favor or be more comfortable with people who are like us.
Some experts say Asians lack the political power of other minority groups, such as African Americans and Hispanics. One group pressing for greater representation of Asians in reporting is the Asian American Journalists Association. The group supports Asian American reporters and those seeking journalism careers. VOA spoke with the group's vice president for broadcast, Nyla Boodoo, on Skype. She says there has been progress in recent years.
I feel like even having those conversations is something that wouldn't have happened years ago. And I think the fact that we're even having those conversations is a sign of progress.
A leading broadcast industry group says 2011 was the best year for Asian American broadcasters. That year, Asians made up 3.5% of the industry. However, the percentage of Asians has decreased since then. Many Asian Americans are concerned issues important to their communities will continue to be misinterpreted or ignored. I'm Mario Ritter.
Is it your dream to fly and to work in space? Do you want to be a NASA astronaut? Like many jobs, the first thing would be to fill out the application. A record-breaking 18,300 people filled out applications recently to be an astronaut. NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, said that is how many people applied when it announced it was filling its 2017 astronaut candidate program. But out of those 18,300 applicants, just 8 to 14 will be hired, by the U.S. Space Agency. That means chances of becoming an astronaut are less than 0.08%. That makes getting into this program 65 times harder than getting into Harvard University. Their acceptance rate is 5.2%. It will take NASA 18 months to decide who will be in the new class of astronauts. Ann Romer is NASA's selection manager. She said it is a very hard job making the selections, one they will do very carefully.
It starts by us reviewing all of the files to make sure that they meet the basic qualifications. And then we actually utilize our current team of astronauts to come in and review the files as well.
The first requirement is the applicants must be U.S. citizens. They need a college degree in engineering, biological science, physical science, computer science, or mathematics. They also need at least 3 years of experience in a similar field or at least 1,000 hours as a jet airline pilot. There are requirements to pass a physical test, and then there are personality tests as well. What kinds of personality qualities is NASA looking for in an astronaut?
I think leadership, teamwork, the ability to both work on a team, lead a team, but also follow, be a follower on a team. Communications certainly plays a role. So it's some pretty common skills that I think translate into even other professions.
About 120 applicants will be invited to the Johnson Space Center in Houston, Texas, for a first round of interviews. Then about half of them will go back for a second round. Once the astronauts are selected, they must complete 2 years of training. This is when astronauts learn a little bit of everything about spaceflight, Romer said. Things like learning about all the systems used by NASA and Russian language training, until the U.S. has a working vehicle to launch into space, NASA still depends on Russia to get astronauts into space. They also learn EVA, or extravehicular activities. In other words, they learn all about walking in space.
So they do a little bit of everything in that two-year window before moving into then mission-specific training.
This is the group that may fly on as many as 3 new spacecraft still being developed. They include NASA's Orion, which will be taking people into deep space exploration. NASA hopes to get humans to Mars in the 2030s. If you are a young person interested in a space career later, Romer offers this advice.
The piece of advice that we always like to tell young folks that are interested is to pick a career that you're passionate and enthusiastic about, because you tend to do well with things you like, and then being an astronaut would be the icing on the cake to hopefully what would otherwise be a very fulfilling career.
If you are chosen to be an astronaut, you would be part of a rare and prestigious group. The first 7 astronauts were picked from the military in 1959. Since then, only 338 others have been chosen to be NASA astronauts. I'm Ann Ball.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.